Hi, everybody. Welcome. This is Vicki Ronchetti with Show Dog Prep School. Today, we have Kay Pizer of Kaylin's Chinese Crusteds here for our Breeder of Influence interview. So excited about this. We've been trying to schedule this for a while. And I always start these out by saying how we met. And so we actually just met, but I'm so glad we did because I have... I work very closely with a client and with some handlers who have dogs from Kay. So I was super excited. The quality of these dogs is really, really phenomenal. They've done really nice things. And so I asked my client, hey, would you reach out to Kay and see if we could do an interview? So that's how we met. And so I'm super excited to have you here, Kay. Thank you so much for being here.
You're most welcome.
Talking about your Crusteds. So the first thing I want to ask you is, who is Kaylin's? Like, is it just you? Is it anybody else? How did you start?
Well, my start in dogs was in boxers when I was like three. So mm-hmm. I've been in dogs for a long time. Crusteds about coming on 20 years now. And Virginia Doris is my partner in Crusteds. She's slowing down because she just turned 80. Mm-hmm. So she's going to back off a bit. But other than that, it's kind of a huge family of everybody that has acquired and come in. And, you know, although I do most of it, but we welcome everybody into the family.
It's amazing. And we need more of that, you know?
Yes, we do. Because people don't do it.
Right. And it's like I was telling Kay, and I hope it's okay if I say this publicly, right before we went live, that my client who has a dog from Kay went to the National and just felt so welcomed and included. And that's really important, especially for somebody who doesn't know a lot of people in a breed. And maybe they, you know, nobody wants to go to a big dog show and just sit there by themselves. So I thought it was really cool that she was like, oh, they taught me so much about grooming and presentation and just all these different things. And so I really applaud you for that.
Well, you know, she basically, her dogs are handled most of the time by a handler.
Right.
And then when she got the new one, she wanted to show the other one herself. So not only she does that, she does other things with him, but she right. hadn't had to do the grooming at the shows before. So
exactly.
It was a learning curve for her, as well as showing him and learning to move him at the right speed and do, you know, he was used to doing what a handler told him to do, not what mama told him to do.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, and then you mentioned to me, I know that you also have standard poodles. So got out of boxers and then did you have standard poodles before Crusteds or both?
Yes, have boxers.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that is quite the, party over there.
I don't do boxers as much. Most of my boxers live in other households since my older girl died. Mm-hmm. They live in households with teenagers and I only have three of them. So, but I still have them. And when my mother passed away a few years ago, I promised her breeding program would not disappear.
Oh, that's nice.
So we still do boxers and I enjoy them. I do enjoy them a lot. And they uh-huh. now have standard poodles living with them again.
Yeah.
They used to have years back, the family that has the boxers. So,
oh, nice.
So I've been coming to dog shows, been at dog shows for 61 years.
Wow. Yeah. So my next question was, did you grow up in a dog showing breeding family? And since your mother had boxers, I'm assuming you did. So tell me about that.
Well, when they got their first boxer, I was, I think, two or three. And my mother went to a puppy match and my father was like, no, we're not doing this. And he went and somebody asked him to show a dog and he went best in match and he was hooked. So my father was Dick Baum, who a lot of old timers know of. People that aren't don't. And he was considered Mr. Boxer for many years. He passed away 20 some odd years ago of cancer. Uh-huh. And he had probably won the National more than anybody else in the country, the Boxer National. And
wow.
My mother was the breeder. And then when they split up, he still handled for everybody all over the country. But he and his wife, Chris, who is my stepmother and still now my mother because my other mother passed away, you know, they traveled and showed and won best in shows everywhere and national specialties and groups at the garden and everything else. So I've been in it for a long time.
Yeah.
Probably far too long.
Was your, so did your father continue breeding boxers too when they split up?
He wasn't mostly great at the breeding part. He couldn't pick the best puppy. He was a fabulous handler, train the dogs, take care of them, show them. You have to have an eye to be a really good breeder. And he was had a great eye for a dog, but not a great eye for a puppy. My mother was a fabulous breeder.
That's a really interesting thing, because it's true. And it's interesting because I meet a lot of people, and I'm curious to get your take on this, who say, you can't pick a puppy when it's 8 weeks old. And it's like, I do, you know, like, that's what I do. Like, I do, I want my puppies, because even though I am a breeder, you know, my love in life is behaviorism and, you know, the training piece. So it's really important to me to get those puppies into their lives and getting started while I get to get started with the puppy that I keep. Do you find that you make your picks early on, or is it different for the different breeds for you?
Very different for the different breeds. The boxers, the standard poodles by 9 weeks, I pretty much know what's going to stay, what's going to go, where it's going to go. I do a lot of my standard poodles. A lot of them go as service dogs.
Oh, okay. So
they go to service dog homes. We have a service dog trainer, and she's probably had 20 of my dogs in the last 10 years or maybe less than 10 years.
Wow.
And she does a really good job with them. And then we have a couple others that have gone as service dogs. One just popped up on the screen, actually. She has a standard poodle service dog for her autistic daughter. And
nice.
He's fabulous. And she has done a wonderful job with him. But with the Cresteds, I know what I like, but like, I have a litter right now that just turned 3 months today, actually. And I still have all of the girls, because I can't make a decision on what I want to keep yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, the one I like a lot is Square. It's not a square breed. So she could be stagey. She could be going to be too short backed for what I want.
Right.
You know, and I'm not in a hurry for the Cresteds to go off to a new home at a very young age. I just picked up puppies when I was talking to you yesterday. I was picking up puppies in Colorado, and they're 9 weeks old, and she did a great job raising them. But I brought half the litter here to go on with and see what they do. But most of the time, my Cresteds don't leave till, if I know you, they can leave at like 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's usually 12 weeks, 16 weeks before they go.
So earlier, if they're like a pet prospect, right?
Well,
like
it depends on the people, and it depends on the size of the dog.
Okay.
Because some of the Crested puppies are really small. Doesn't mean they stay small. I have one now.
Right.
She's 3 months old, and she's not 3 pounds. She's tiny. And she wasn't. But when we vaccinated at 10 weeks, she didn't take it well. And she got a little stunty. She looks good, but she's tiny. And she's supposed to go to a show home. And I don't know whether she'll go or not.
So because right now, she could just end up being too little.
Yeah. And she's beautiful. But, you know, I'm not going to put, you know, you can only guarantee puppies just so far.
Right.
You know, this is a good prospect.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want a show dog, you're going to wait till I have it to 6 months, and then you're going to get a show dog.
Right, right.
Because then it still may get big, but it's going to be a show dog.
And you're going to really know what you have.
Right, because by then we're pretty much, you know, we pretty much know at least it's going to be the right balance. You know, it's got the right attitude. Its mouth is pretty much going to be good, although their mouths change on the Cresteds all the time, especially the hairless. It's just, I don't tend to let them go as early as I do the big breeds.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Tuck, the breed is primarily, we're talking about Cresteds with a little bit of standard poodle and a little bit of boxer. So this is interesting. So my Crested, I told you I have a Chinese Crested, my old Django, who was maybe the person I got him from is on here. She, you know, was rescuing a bunch of Craigslist dogs, and he was one of the ones they wanted $50 for. Like he was the big pricey one. They weren't going to just take to the shelter.
Right.
So they ended up, you know, she bought this dog for $50 and I fostered him, and it was a foster failure. So I've had him all this time, but like, so he was two when I got him, and it's like his canine teeth were like puppy teeth. They were like pointy little weird baby teeth. And then one day one was just gone. It just like broke off out of his head. And
that
I was like,
that's very normal.
Yeah, that's just wild. Why is that? Do they know? Or is it just how they are?
Well, the hairless breeds tend to not have as many teeth, because hair, bone, and teeth all kind of go together. And in the standard, they don't have to have full dentition. But we have what we call toy dog teeth and normal dog teeth. So even though they're hairless, some of them have what you would consider normal teeth when you look at their mouths. Mm-hmm. And then some of them have little dog teeth. The dog that was winner's dog at the National this year, he has little dog teeth. So he probably will not keep his teeth his whole life, mm-hmm. because little dog teeth are like Chihuahua teeth and stuff, and they don't tend to stay. You know, they don't tend to be as strong. They don't tend to be as deep rooted. And even Kai, who was the number one dog for 3 years and has broke all the records in Chinese Cresteds for most things. He had canine teeth when I was started showing him, and I was a group ring, and he grabbed a piece of bait and he started spitting out bloody foam. And I was like, what are you doing? And it was a puppy canine that had, cause he'd never gotten an adult one, and the puppy one was still there.
Oh, see, that's what Django's teeth look like. Yes. It looked like a baby tooth.
Yeah. And that, sometimes they have those.
Okay.
And they don't always get adult canine teeth.
That's so interesting. And so, cause my other breed is Lao Chen, and they, like the standard actually says exceptionally large teeth for their mouth, right? They don't even do anything with it except for bark all the time, but like, there's not a need for those big teeth. But do you, is there a same, do they still have the same weird stuff in the powder puffs or not so much?
No, they have full dentition. You know, missing teeth are to be penalized, and their teeth look like normal dog teeth.
Okay.
Because on a hairless crested, most of the time their canine teeth are straight. We call them tusks. They don't always look like tusks, but they don't have the curve of a normal canine tooth.
Okay.
So they'll have a straighter tooth. Even if it's a big dog tooth, it'll be straight instead of curved.
Fascinating. So can we talk for a second about, you know, the powder puff and the, like, I believe Django, mine is a hairless, like there's only a few little extra hairs, but like, I can't imagine trying to breed profuse hair in some areas and no hair in the other areas. You know what I mean? Like how the Cresteds have a lot of hair some places. So can we talk a little bit about the different coats and how come, like I've had clients who said, no, I was assured this was like a powder puff, but then they did, I think they were able to do DNA testing.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it says, no, it's hair. Yeah. So can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, originally the breed was a hairless breed. They powder puffs are there because if you breed hairless to hairless to hairless, you get mummified puppies and you lose the breed. It's the same thing in Cholos. You have coated Cholos and you have, you know, you know, hairless Cholos. So technically, the thought is, were they in the wild? If there was a litter of puppies and there were no powder puffs, when the mother went to hunt, then the puppies would die because they wouldn't be able to control their body temperatures.
Correct, right.
So a powder puff would be there to keep them warm. But I don't know whether that's technically true or not. Nobody knows because, it is an older breed. So here in the States especially, everybody wants them to be beautiful. They want them to have this flowing mane and this, or the big boots and the long tail, and everything is beautiful. Well, the more hair you get for furnishings, the more hair you get on the body.
Right.
So
which makes perfect sense.
Yeah. You can have a nice amount of hair on a minimally hairless or true hairless, but it's never going to have that huge flowing, beautiful coat. You know, it's like looking at a quarter horse and a Shire. A Shire's got boots and Clydesdale, and they've got big, you know, hairy feet and these, you know, long, profuse manes, you know, and they're bred that way.
Right.
To have that. So, but I like, because I'm kind of a stickler on breed standards and have been. When I started in poodles, I wouldn't show oversized poodles. If they didn't fit in the breed standard size-wise, hire somebody else. I'm not going to show them. So, my ideal Chinese Crested is similar hair-wise to what I have in Kai, where he's, like, grooming him to show him was 10 minutes if you gave him a bath, because he's basically true hairless. He grows sprigs on his back. And so it was easy. Then when I went to somebody else who needed more shaving and had more body hair, then of course it's a lot more work. Well, ideally, it's a hairless breed. You know, we don't want them to have stubble, and we want them to have less body hair. Usually less body hair means, you know, unless they're pink, which sometimes has skin issues because of sun and blackheads and whatever, you know, all of my true hairless have fabulous skin, and I've imported quite a few, but It's a hairless breed. So they should have a hairless body or a minimally hairless body as much as possible.
Right.
You know, does it mean I'm going to throw away a hairy one? No, not necessarily. But I'm going to breed that to something that I'm going to get less hair. Mm-hmm. If possible. You don't never know. You can breed two really hairy bodied dogs and get true hairless or vice versa. I bred two true hairless, one that I imported in Kai, and I got four freaking powder puffs. And hairless. The first three born were powder puffs. I'm like, how does this happen? I mean,
so was a powder puff, did they just naturally occur in the breed? They're just yes. started being fluffy ones?
Yes.
Okay. And so then people would breed to those ones to sort of, you know.
Well, a long time ago, nobody wanted a powder puff.
Okay.
Because a Chinese Crested was a hairless dog.
Were they ever not allowed the powder puff to be shown?
Not from when they were recognized here, you know, but okay. I don't know, you know, I don't know the preference. I know the last 20 or 30 years of history. I don't know a lot of history from, I've researched and read a lot on some of the first ones that were here.
Yeah.
You know, and I have pictures of them on my walls, you know, and they had what they considered a deer type, you know, which was a much more refined and up on leg.
Uh-huh.
So they were different types, but none of them had any hair. They didn't have furnishings. They didn't have head hair. They didn't have tail hair. You know, they had.
Wow. Uh-huh.
You know, and then as they got more popular, then the ones that actually came out with more body hair, people kept because they're like, oh, that's prettier, you know?
Oh, okay. So much more work if it's supposed to be a hairless, right?
Correct. But, you know, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And my intention is to breed minimally hairless dogs that are quality enough to compete all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, we had a true hairless dog because John and Debbie Caponetto of Blancho Cresteds started me in Cresteds. And they had a puppy that, you know, they didn't need, and my stepmother wanted him. So I gave him to her. He just died a month or so ago, and he was 23 years old.
Wow.
23 years old. You know, it's like, you just don't know. And he didn't have but a couple of sprigs of hair anywhere on his body. He had a little tiny strip on his head and a couple of hairs on his tail. That's all he had. And he lived for 23 years.
What is the average lifespan?
I usually around 16 to 18, you know?
Okay. So, cause Django's 12. So yeah. I need him to be alive for a long time.
Well, I have one that's going to be 15 in December, but she's not doing so well right now, but
I'm sorry.
We'll see. She's going to go see the vet tomorrow cause she's having a little bit of walking issues, but you wouldn't have known that 3 months ago at the National cause she was breathtaking at the National.
Oh, wow.
So
do you handle your own dogs?
I handle my dogs, everybody else's dogs. I show dogs for a living. So.
Oh, okay. So you're mm-hmm. a professional handler and yes. All breeds, all kinds?
Within reason, yes. Uh-huh. Within reason, yes. I turn down breeds that I think that if you can't do justice to the breed that they ask you to show, grooming wise, as well as competitor wise, then you shouldn't show it as a handler. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I know a lot of handlers that show whatever people want them to show, but I'm not that way. Like people ask me to show Bichons. I do not have time to groom Bichons. I have standard poodles. I have Cresteds. You know, I have dogs with a lot of hair and I show miniatures and toys as well as standard poodles. I don't have time to groom other coated dogs. Don't ask me to show Shih Tzus. Don't ask me to show Maltese. Don't ask me to show Bichons. I can't do it.
Yeah.
There's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. And those coated dogs, I mean, especially, well, like the standard poodles. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just, I can't imagine having to do a bunch of them. You know, like I was telling you, that's how I ended up getting Dolly because her breeder owner, who's a professional handler, was pregnant. Mm-hmm. Was like, I just can't have all these standard poodles when I have this baby, you know, it was going to be too much.
I keep saying that too, but they're still here.
So I asked you already, the next question is tell me about your breed and how, but what I really want to know is, so what got you into them? How do you go from boxers to Cresteds and standard poodles?
Well, John and Debbie Caponetto are friends of mine. They used to live in Florida and they ran a kennel club called the Canine Kennel Club and they put on shows and they did, there was a lot of rare breeds at the shows as well as other breeds. So what we did is they asked me to judge one of their shows one time and I fell in love with this. I put up a little Tiny Crested Bitch in the four to six for Best in Show. And at the same time, I don't remember what I did in the older puppy class, but then in adults, I put up a Thai Ridgeback. Had never seen one. They were stunning. Uh-huh. So I ended up with one of those as well. But they said, oh, we'll give you a Chinese Crested. So they bring these puppies, and they were hairy hairless. So they were obviously shaved. And I'm like, if I'm going to do that much work, I'll have another toy poodle. Uh-huh. And so then they showed me a little powder puff dog. And I was like, what's one more? So that was his name. Blancho's What's One More. My first Chinese Crested. He won 4 groups and 2 Best in Shows. And wow. He was the one that started me in the breed. And that was about 19 years ago.
How long has the breed been AKC recognized? Do you know?
Since the 90s. Sean Flute, who worked for me years back when she was a child, and is not as active in the breed as she used to be, but she was into it even before they were recognized. So I had a little bit of background in the breed because mm-hmm. we were friends for a lot of years. But I always thought they were beautiful. It's just that I didn't know much about them. And then I got one and got hooked. They're like potato chips. You can't have just one.
As Heather will tell you.
Yes. And all my other people that have like 2 or 3 or 4 now.
Yeah.
So
tell me a little bit about your foundation animals. It sounds like that one that you were just talking about was one of your first ones. Was that a male?
Yes, but we never really bred him much. I had acquired, that's how I actually got involved with Virginia Doris, who is my breeding partner in the Cresteds. And I was showing her standard poodle and she fell in love with Spike. That's what we called him. And so she said, well, you have 2 choices. She says, you can keep him and pay for his own career and show him, or you can let me have him. I'll pay for his career, pay you to show him. And when he retires, he lives with me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, okay, I'm not really stupid, so we'll do
that. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Right. So, and so, tell Tansy I said hi too.
I just keep throwing up all these little comments about you.
Yes.
So, people are trying to say hi.
Yeah, so that was my first one. And we didn't do much in the way of using him at stud. But then I had gotten a couple of bitches, and then we just kind of went forward from there.
He just got you to fall in love with the breed. That's all.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I still literally have dogs with John and Debbie, and they have dogs, you know, they have dogs from me that don't go back to their dogs. Uh-huh. So, you know, we still actually co-breed together.
That's nice. That's really nice. How long has that relationship been going on?
20 years.
It's amazing. I love mm-hmm. it when people can talk about, you know, like these co-breeding relationships that have gone on for so long. Mm-hmm. I recently had Sandra Pachari Hicks on who has Dandy Denmont, and we talked about her and Betty Ann's relationship. And I always love hearing about it when, you know, people have been breeding together for years and years and years, and that is all staying really intact. I think that's such a cool thing. So well, who are your...
And we have some people that have just gotten into the breed in the last 3 or 4 years that I co-breed with and that I co-own dogs with that I think will go on when I stop and mm-hmm. go on with the dogs as well.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's really good. I just did a talk with Laura Reeves not too long ago about passing the torch and
yes.
like that whole idea of like bringing up new breeders and figuring out you know, sort of who you want to trust this with, you know, well, and who you can.
Yeah, that's the hard part. Because, you know, people laugh at me because they're like, well, how many dogs do you have? I said, I don't know, about 20, 25. I don't know. Uh-huh. I'd have to count them. And it depends on how many puppies are here at any given time.
Right. You know?
But it still comes down to the fact that, you know, then you have to look and go, okay, so who can leave when they're done being a breeding dog? Or every now and then somebody just comes up and goes, oh my God, I love that one. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess that one can go with you, you know?
Yeah.
But you have to trust. And, you know, unfortunately, too many breeders don't trust new people with their dogs. You know, and like the dogs I send overseas, if they're not good enough to win groups here, they're not going overseas.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's not a dog that I think is good enough to win a group, I'm not showing it in bred by. You know, I think that's
yeah.
the class that should be valued more than any other class, you know, in our class animals. But people just throw stuff in it because they bred it and they don't care. And I said, you people need to learn, you know, more about your breed and what you're producing and what you're representing.
Right. Because when you're in the bred by class, you're really saying, oh my God, I made this. Isn't it beautiful? This is my idea of perfection.
Yes.
Right. And you know, like I want to do something with it. Mm-hmm. So who were those first foundation animals? Who were the girls? Who were the girls that you got that kind of started it for you?
Well, I had gotten, her name was Kaylin. I think she was Blanche O'Kaylin's Leather and Lace. And then we had her sister. We had the Polka Dot Bikini Bitch, and which is funny because at the same time I had Kaylin's Polka Dot Bikini, which was out of Blancho dogs. They had Blancho's Polka Dot Bikini, and we ended up competing up against each other.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then, you know, I went from there. I did breed into the Whispering Lanes once, got some beautiful stuff out of that. And I started to get dogs from other parts of the world. I have Nora, who was the top Chinese crested in England. She was the number one dog all breed in 2010. She's on my couch. She's almost 15. I imported dogs from Vanatonia there. I've gone to different places, and I, as anybody else, I look on Facebook, I see a puppy, I'm like, message them, you know, would you be, you know, open to it coming to the United States, mm-hmm. you know, and then we just go from there and see whether we establish a relationship.
Yeah.
So, most of the dogs I've brought in have worked out well. Some have won a lot and not produced.
Uh-huh.
And some have finished their championships and then become amazing producers.
Right. Isn't it funny how that works?
Yes.
You know, like you have one and you're like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. This one is just going to do great things. And then it's like,
nothing.
The ugly sister is the one who makes the beautiful babies or something like that.
Well, we had a bitch we imported that was beautiful. She won a lot. She was a puff bitch, never produced a thing. We bred her twice. She was a terrible breeding bitch. Not a good producer. There was one live puppy out of four puppies on x-rays in two litters. And, you know, it was not meant to be.
Yeah.
And she has a great home. She lives on a lady's couch with us with an older Samoyed. So
perfect life. We call that a satin pillow home.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lisa, what advice we would give to a newcomer in the breed is, what do you want to do? That's the whole thing. You know, you need to research your breeders. We have a few diseases. We have things that are markers that we really don't know what they're going to do yet in the breed. When you go to a vet and ask about the breed, you get different opinions, because you have, like in boxers, if you go to a vet with a boxer, they say, oh, they're going to have cancer. Boxers always have cancer. Well, I've only had a few in 60 years that have had cancer. Most of them don't. If you go to a vet with a Chinese crested that has any eye issue, oh, it has dry eye. The whole breed has dry eye. Well, that's not accurate.
Right.
You know, of course, I guess if we checked the whole breed and did tear tests on every dog that we have, maybe some of them do have and are not symptomatic. You know, so you have to, you just have to look and see, and you have to realize where you're at, what you want, if you're going to start in the breed. You know, so you research health problems, health issues. You know, certain lines have epilepsy. You try and avoid those.
I was just going to ask what the main health issues are.
You know, I don't know about main health issues, because we test for a lot of different things. Eyes, I would say, is probably the main health issue. But in all honesty, in 20 years in the breed, I've seldom had anything. I had a dog that came up non-visual, and he was like 5 years old. So we had done his health testing. He was clear on PLL, clear on PRCD, everything that we could test for DNA wise, he was clear on. So he should not have gone non-visual for any reason.
Right.
So when he did and his owner contacted me, I sent another kit. I sent that back to Paw Prints. They called me, said, why are we testing this dog? He's already tested clear. So I sent them the vet reports, and he says, you know, there are things that we don't know. I mean, there's things that we don't know. There's markers we don't have.
Right.
There's things that can happen that we don't know. And so we never knew why he went blind. I mean, he just did. But that's an oddity where, you know, you breathe long enough, you're going to see everything.
Exactly.
But something that happened that nobody has an answer for. The vets don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. The other breeders don't have an answer. But if you have to pick one thing mainly, like I say, some lines have epilepsy. I've been lucky enough not to have that. And yeah. And then eye issues and primary lens luxation, which, you know, then when the lens flips, then you catch it in time or you lose an eye.
Yeah. But that's pretty benign. I mean, in terms of what some breeds have, the huge range of health issues. I mean, those, that's a pretty not huge amount of health concerns.
Well, it's not like bloat or copper toxicity or something.
Right.
Another breed that could, you know, basically, oh, if they have that, they're going to die.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We have markers now for IVDD, intervertebral disc disease, which it's an opinion right now because all we have is markers. So everybody in the breed has their own opinion on whether to pay attention to the markers or not. My thought is if you can avoid them, you avoid them. If you can't, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
And but to me, it seems to be more of a phenotype disease. Dogs that are longer bodied and lower legged seem to be the ones that are affected more often than the dogs that are more up on leg and with less length of body.
Right. Exactly. Which totally makes sense. Right. Being a dachshund breeder.
Right. And the thing is, it's something that's in most beagles, most dachshunds, you know, it's a marker in those breeds. So now they found that we have that marker in our breed.
Okay.
But even if they have two copies of the marker, it says they're no more likely to actually become clinical with two copies of the marker than they are with zero copies of the marker.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we shouldn't pay attention to it when we breed.
Exactly. Which totally makes sense. Now I want to address this because somebody said, Kate said, you have the very best dogs and have produced the best temperaments ever. So proud to co-own all my dogs with you. You're the best mentor ever. That's so sweet.
Well, but she's one of my up and coming people that I know that will take over for me in the future.
Well, I do want to talk about temperament. You know, when I got my dog, who, as I told you, was like just running around on a farm with a bunch of chihuahuas and what it was a, you know, a foster fail situation. But he was very fearful when he got here. Mainly it was auditory. He was really, you know, panicked about sounds, but I did a ton of desensitization and counter conditioning. And he really, I would say has been over that for a very long time. But I do see a fair amount of sensitivity and shyness in this breed. A lot of it seems to be just very connected to the owners. You know, I could tell that this breed is very, like with my own dog and also the other one, they're very tight with their owners. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes this can be a breed that's, you know, harder to have on a handler unless that handler can really, like, have that time with the dog to really develop a really strong relationship with the dog. Do you think that's the case?
Yes. And I agree that a lot of it is owner manufactured. Because I came from working dogs, my life is different. My dogs are raised differently. My puppies sometimes are born in my motorhome if I'm traveling for a long time. If they're not born in the motorhome, by the time that they're 4 weeks old, they're traveling every weekend to dog shows with me. They're exposed to everything from day one. They're exposed to big dogs, little dogs, people, anybody that comes, motorcycles, lawnmowers, everything. They're exposed to everything. And when I go to a dog show and I have a litter of puppies or two, however many puppies we have in a pen, people walk up and they're like, no, 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 pick me, pick me, pick me. So they learn from when they're on their feet.
Right.
People are a good thing and attention is a good thing. But a lot of times when you take a puppy that, even if I had it and it leaves at 3 or 4 months, and if you take it and you just like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry. It's okay. You don't have to do this. It's okay. Nothing's going to hurt you. Well, then the dog's going to become fearful because it doesn't know why you're telling it it's okay all the time. There must be something to be worried about. You know, you as a behaviorist, you know, I mean, it makes a big difference.
And,
you know, some bloodlines aren't as strong temperamented as mine are. But like I said, I came from working dogs. I want a dog that when I go enough, they're going to go, fine, I got it. They're not going to go, oh my God, she yelled at me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't care if it's a toy dog. I don't care if it's a toy poodle. I don't care if it's, you know, a chihuahua. You know, they need their dog. They should
have a dog. They need to not be a shrinking violet. Exactly. Like, oh my God, don't kill me. But so many of them are so sensitive. Do you think that a lot of that is the breed or how breeders are raising them?
The breed standard calls for a gay, happy little dog. It's in the breed standard. They're supposed to be a jolly, happy, gay. They're not supposed to crawl on the ground. Right, I go to dog shows and my puppies go around the ring and people are like, well, but you always beat us. Well, I'm the only one in the ring with his tail up. Sorry, but I do. You know, well, they'll learn. Well, this is fine, but mine learn before they come to a dog show and they never have their tails down as puppies because I raise them not to have their tails down.
Right. I think that's so important. Dogs. I mean, and I think that like I do, you know, my program that I like to use is Suzanne Clothier's Enrich Puppy Protocol. So it's not nearly what you're doing, like as far as them getting to travel and stuff like that, but it's a lot of intentional stuff so that they've had a lot of novelty in their life. And so new things aren't scary. We just want them to just be raised like, oh, there's a cool thing. Oh, whoa, cool things that are different happen all the time. So I think that there's probably so much truth in that, that it's, it really, you know, people are getting stable dogs from you, not only from the DNA in the dog and the dog's actual temperament that he comes with, but also how he was raised, just to like that, you know, not that, you know, I do feel that, and I haven't been doing this nearly as long as you have, but I've been doing it long enough to when I started, and we all took our puppies to field trials. Right. Like, and everybody looked at puppies. It was like when I went to a dog show, you were going to go to someone's RV and there was going to be a litter of puppies. And our mentors were going to get us up out of our chairs and put our hands on them and say, no, let me show you how you look at the shoulder. No, let me show you how, you know, there was a, it was like, we weren't as sort of worried and, you know, something will happen. It was like, no, these dogs were out there. We were having them, like I said, at field trials. We were having them at each other's homes. There was, it just wasn't as like, oh my God, something bad's going to happen. And from a behavioral standpoint, I am generally far more concerned about the fallout for behavioral stuff than disease, right? Like, I don't want to make puppies sick. I'm not going to be stupid, but I'm going to make sure that they get out and they're exposed far earlier than when they finish their vaccines. Right. I'm just careful about it.
Mine are at dog shows before they ever have their first vaccine, because let's be honest. Most of the time their mother's immunity is pretty good.
Right.
Most of the time. And you know, if not, something's going to happen later on anyway. It's not that you want it to happen, but you know, if I drop a bowl here, you know, because I'm picking something up and a bowl falls and it clangs all over the place, they're going, oh, is there food? They're not going, oh my God, something made a noise. Let me run away.
Right.
You know, so it's a big difference. You know, we're at dog shows and we're in the ring and with Crested's and people are like, they need to stop banging. It's bothering my dog. My dog never even flips an ear because mine have been conditioned to noises and, you know,
right.
I mean, you can't really condition them to cold all the time if you have Chinese Crested's, you know, so the cold react to more than they are noise or anything else.
Exactly.
And a lot of the Crested people think that my dogs are too tough. I want a dog that I can hand to anybody and they can take it in the ring and show it. And it's not going to go, oh my God, I can't, you, I don't know you, don't touch my leash.
Right. And it sounds like that's correct. They're supposed to be.
They are supposed to be
confident and happy and not worried about everything.
I've shown to judges who have literally said to me, if your dogs were not in the ring, there would not be a ribbon handed out today. They forget I used to show this breed and this breed is not supposed to crawl around with its tail down.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So I want to ask you, do you have a formula for breeding dogs?
No.
For your breeding programs?
No.
So you don't do you do a lot of line breeding? Do you do whatever you feel like, you know, based on the dog's phenotype? Like, what is your breeding sort of?
I breed out every time I breed out. Well, not every time. Most times when I breed out, something comes back and kicks me in the teeth, you know, but I will breed out. And when I say this, I mean to different stud dogs. I breed. Like, my dogs seem to be really consistent producers, type and temperament. You know, size-wise, sometimes you get little tiny ones, sometimes you get great big ones. But for the most part, type and temperament, you get the same thing when you breed to my dogs. And so I import bitches and I breed other people's bitches and their puppies still look like my puppies, you know, because the dogs are consistent producers. When I breed out to other people's stud dogs, you know, I breed knowing, okay, well, probably if I get four puppies, I'm going to really like two of them. And mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. It just depends on whether I happen to want to keep a dog or a bitch, you know, at the
right,
time.
Right.
So, I do phenotype most of the time. I do know what pedigrees I want to avoid, whether there's health issues, temperament issues, not good coats on the puffs, you know, because there's my first puff dog did not have great hair. So I mm-hmm. learned how to make adequate hair look good.
Mm-hmm.
So like the puff I have now that won the national and at 8 months old, she has fabulous hair. And so most of my puffs have good hair. I have a few with fabulous hair. I'd like to have more with fabulous hair when I have puffs. So I'm not going to breed to a dog that I know doesn't throw good puff coat.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have five puppies and two of them are puffs and three of them are hairless, doesn't mean I'm pitching the two puffs just automatically.
Right.
I'm going to keep whatever the better puppy is or whatever I need at the time.
And so you get both in both litters, regardless of, like, you could breed two hairless and get puffs. You could breed a puff and a hairless and get both. Is it yes. just like
you could okay. breed two hairless and get puffs?
Okay.
It doesn't matter. It just depends on what happens to be there. And I've repeated breedings. I did a breeding. I got five bitches, but I had three hairless bitches, two puff bitches. The puff bitches were patch marked. You know, they had half and half color wise. Mm-hmm. And hairless bitches were all like solid color with white legs, white markings, like a boxer type markings, all of them the same color. Mm-hmm. I did the same breeding 2 years later. Every one of them had spots. Every one of them was spotted. I didn't get a solid mm-hmm. colored puppy in the litter. How does that work? You don't know how right. that works. Right. Color. Never, never. So I'm like,
do you like one more than the other, puffs or hairless?
No, I, everybody says I prefer hairless. I don't. I prefer the right dog.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's puff or hairless, it doesn't matter to me. Whether it's dog or bitch, it doesn't matter to me. White puffs, I tend to avoid just because it's a lot more work. Mm-hmm. Even if they have good hair, it's still a lot more work to keep them white when I let them run the yard with 20 other dogs. You know, it's a lot of work to keep a white puff white.
Yeah.
You know? So if they're like pretty, like I have a solid white puppy right now with just some markings on her head that I picked up and she's beautiful, but I won't keep her because I don't need her. And because it's not my preference in color. It's the same thing yeah. with spots on a hairless one. I don't tend to keep spotted ones because it's harder to keep the skin. I live in Florida. They play in the sun. You know, I kept the spotted yeah. dog, you know, a year ago. He won Winner's Dog at the National this year. He's beautiful. He'll never probably go anywhere, but it's not my favorite color. I prefer a darker body
mm-hmm.
on the hairless dogs, mostly because I live in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a whole lot easier to keep skin and not worry about them burning if they're out in the sun too long. And
right.
Lord knows they can have half sun, half shade, and they're not going to go in the shade.
They know they're sun worshipers.
Oh, they are. You know that.
So tell me who some of your favorite dogs are that are Kalen dogs that carry your kennel name.
Oh, all of them. I mean, I can't even go favorites. You know, Kahlua was a dog that he had six best in shows. Beautiful dog. I showed him. He went out to Tammy Sedlitz to be shown for a bit. Then he went to Lois Demers for a bit. You know, he was just a beautiful dog. He was a fun dog, a pleasant dog. He's 10, almost 10 now, I think, 9 or 10. And then his sister, Cosmo, was a puff bitch. That litter, I had multiple best in show winner and two reserve best in show winners in the same litter. You don't get that in Chinese Cresteds.
Right.
You know? So, and then Kai, he's just fabulous. He's going to be 8. He's got like 80 champions out of probably 110 puppies produced. You always know a Kai puppy if you see it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're just, and he's a great dog to live with. He's a house pet, you know, he can go anywhere with anybody. I can hand him to a kid and he can go with them or he can just hang out. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
So
are you seeing these lovely comments about you?
Yeah.
People love you, obviously. Trisha said, all of my Cresteds are Kaylin dogs, and Kay is a wonderful, honest, straightforward mentor. Don't ask her a question if you don't want an honest answer.
I'm a little bit blunt. People would say a little bit. Well, but yes, I am a little bit blunt. I try not to be negative, but I am blunt. You know, if you want to,
yeah.
You know, I'm going to say, I would rather it be better here. When I was younger, I would say, it's not good here. Now I'd say, I'd rather it be better in the shoulder or a better coat or a better tail, right, or whatever. And some people still take offense to that, but I don't mean it derogatory. You know, none of them are perfect.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So someone said puff to puff will only Dina. Produce puff.
Correct.
So, okay. So look at someone. Oh, Ark. Hi, Ark. Ark's in my mentor program. Puff to puff gets all puffs, right?
Yes.
All right. So we learned that. Okay. What about favorite dogs that aren't in your breeding pro or that aren't your kennel name? Because those, the ones you just talked about, were ones you bred, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Nora that I have here, she's Vanatonia Unwrapped. And she's just, I showed her at the veteran showcase at the National. She was 14 and a half. And everyone said, can I special her? I'm like, you know, she's old. She has no teeth. But she is amazing. The Vanatonia dogs were amazing. There's a lot of dogs all over the world that are absolutely beautiful, beautiful dogs. Dogs that I would love to have put my hands on that I never got an opportunity. I was at the World Show and there was a black and white puff dog that looks like a black and white puff dog that we have. And he was amazing. Absolutely amazing. You know, I'm like, when you breed that dog, could I have something? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of beautiful, beautiful dogs that I watched before I ever got into the breed. There's dogs that I would like the opportunity to see in person that I never got to see. You know, it's just, I love the breed. Obviously, if I have 20, 25 Cresteds, I love the breed. But,
yeah,
you know, I made a list the other day. I'm like, who can leave? Not you, not you, not you, not you. Okay, well, we'll just keep them all.
This is my final question. We talked about it a lot, though, kind of. But what do you love most about this breed? Like, why? Why Cresteds? What is this you love about them?
They are so versatile. I don't know about other people's Cresteds, to be honest with you, I'm part of this. My dogs love children. I don't have children. I'm 64 years old. I mean, might see children at the dog shows, but I don't have little kids around. My dogs will go to a baby in a heartbeat to see a baby. They will go with a toddler. You know, they don't care. Whatever you want them to do. They have a high self-preservation. I tried to run Fast Cat. I didn't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. I took them up there when there were big dogs that were barking and barking and barking and barking. And then I tried to run them and they were like, they're going to go after me if I run.
Yeah, this doesn't seem safe.
So I learned to do it a different way when we started in Fast Cat. But other than that, I have dogs that live with Great Danes, Whippets, Boxers, Oswalks. I mean, they live with all different breeds. They don't care. You know, their favorite thing is to have a big dog come up to them and they go, hey, who are you? Uh-huh. You know, they just are so, whatever you want to do, their game. They don't care.
Yeah, you know, it used to be when people would talk about like toy dogs and it's like, what do you get if you want to do obedience with a toy? And it was like Papillon, Papillon, Papillon. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, like, so my Crested's 12 and a half years old now, but like he has so much work ethic. Like he's mm-hmm. very foodie, so that helps. But like if I get out a clicker and any object, he's like, look what I can do. Look what I can do. Like he is totally in, he's the best free shaping dog I have. Like he will offer behaviors and try. And whereas you would think with a lot of toy breeds, you know, maybe you're, you know, going to have a 5-minute training session. He would happily train for a half hour. He will just keep doing it. He loves it. And I don't see that type of biddability and work ethic in a lot of toy breeds for sure. So I think that is something that can, you know, is probably why they are so good at doing different things than other dog sports, even like agility or obedience or something like that.
I had one that qualified and competed, I think it was 2 years ago at Westminster in agility, and he was 9. and he had a heart condition, but he was still running, you know, and he qualified and competed. And he used to beat the Shelties all the time, and they'd get so mad.
Yeah.
They're like, how can a Chinese Crested beat the Shelties? Shelties are the fastest ones. Well, no, they're not.
Yeah.
You know, and they just, you know, they like to, they like to work. Like you say, they're very biddable. We call them bottom feeders because they will eat anything that's on the ground. So if you have food, they will work.
Absolutely. And so that's a trait with them, is the very foodiness.
Yeah. At least with mine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I never, probably one out of 200 that I have will go, oh, okay, I'll eat. Most of them are like, get out of my way. Food is there. I mean, I just open the crates. If there's any kibbles left from big dogs, I just leave the crates open and let the Cresteds loose. They clean them. They don't care.
Yeah. Janko is very, mine is very crazy about food too. And I never knew if it was because, you know, he lived this weird life running around loose with a bunch of dogs and kind of maybe had to fend for himself, or if like the breed is actually super foodie and that's how they are. And they, you know, just like, well, I love that in a dog.
It makes them easy to show because they pay attention to food. You know, they are easy to show because if you have food, they're like, okay, what's next?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with me, Kay, and for talking. You're making me want a Chinese, another Chinese Crested.
Well, when you're ready.
Well, and I'm thoroughly enjoy Panda and Kevin and, you know, some of your dogs that way. So thank you so much for being here. We had a lot of really lovely comments and a lot of people watching. So that was really cool. Yeah. Everybody was really interested in what you had to say. So I can see why. Look at Lisa said, thank you, Kay.
Well, everybody is welcome. And I had a good time. And thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Everybody have a great rest of your night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.